I wanted to let you know, and I'll keep spreading the word, and those that are already on the group might want to spread the word too. We have an online study group of Hazrat Anayat Khan's teachings. It's called the Hazrat Anayat Khan Study Circle, and it's through Yahoo. And it's a very simple method to join. If you're already in the Yahoo group, you can find us, and you probably can just search the directory for Hazrat Anayat Khan in Yahoo and get us. When you sign up, you'll receive automatically, I think I've set it up that way, where you'll get all the teachings that have been distributed so far. And the teachings, we're starting with the religious gathikas, and we'll go through once a month a gathika. And then there's a concentration that will go with the teaching. And then we proceed the next month to another one. And if you want to dialogue with each other, you can online about the teaching. And so it is a very interesting phenomena in that we have people already signed. We have about 150 members, and they're from all over the United States, and they're of all the different Anayati orders, so it's not exclusive. It's going back to the root, and there are people from Colombia, South America, and from Switzerland, and Germany, and Holland, and France, and Italy, and, you know, New Zealand, and Australia, and
St. Augustine.
Yeah, St. Augustine, are you on it? Good. And so there are people from all around the world that are drawn together with these teachings, for these teachings, and for Pir Murshid Hazrat Anayat Khan. And if you want to be part of that, I mean, you can just passively receive the information, or you can be involved with some dialogue online. Sometimes those papers aren't so readily available, and I have the good fortune of having access to all the teachings, and we're just going to proceed from the very basic to all the way up to the more esoteric. So if you'd like to be involved, talk to myself, or your name?
Khadija.
Khadija, talk to Khadija, Nur Latifa, Bria, Karima Gita. There's several people here that are already signed up. Vakila's on it, I think.
Yes.
Good. All right. So, with hands pressed together at heart, let us say the Sufi invocation together. Toward
the One,
the perfection of love,
harmony, and beauty,
the only being,
united with all the illuminated souls,
who form the embodiment of the Master,
the Spirit of Guidance.
And with hands pressed together, do an invocation of your own inwardly and silently, invoking all those beings that have helped you and illuminated your path. They may be spiritual guides. They may be of the animal kingdom, the mineral kingdom. They may be dear friends, family members that have helped you in some way. Invoke their presence, whether they're in the body or not. Just invoking their presence. And we invite them, we don't pull upon them, but we certainly invite them to sit here with us and guide us in our morning practice. May it be so. So I like to begin the morning with reading this quote by Shahabuddin Sawardi. We have a guru amongst us over there. Hail to the company of all who have become mad and drunk with the desire for the world of light. Have you ever had that feeling? Huh?
Yes.
Do you sometimes feel exiled on earth?
That's why we come to camp.
That's why we come to camp. And I'll tell you, many, many years ago, you will appreciate this because you were also a student of Murshida Veer's. I talked to her about that. I said, I don't feel at home. And she said, Nuri, you have to really, you have to confront that within your being, and you have to really fully incarnate, because some people are sort of vacillating. Do you feel that sometimes with yourselves? And so I titled this talk, or not this talk, but this teaching time, Nur al-Anwar. And that's a practice that Murshida Vera gave to me to help with that. And she said, it will connect you to, you know, sort of the celestial realms, but you'll be able to bring that through your being in this realm instead of feeling like you have to go there. You see what I'm saying? So if you look on the little schedule, the name of that, Nur al-Anwar, it means what he's talking about here. Hail to the company of all who have become mad and drunk with the desire for the world of light, with their passionate love for the majesty of the light of lights. So Nur al-Anwar is like that, the light of lights. And who in their ecstasy have become like the seven poles of the world. Now that number seven is a very mystical number. And we have that teaching again and again. Rumi talks about the number seven. It's mentioned in the Holy Quran. I know that Farida Din Attar, in the Conference of the Birds, talks about the seven valleys, that the journey, the spiritual journey that's taken. And I just want to say that as we do this light work, what starts to happen, it's like Hazrat Anayat Khan says, it's like taking a light into a room where everything you always wanted was there, but you didn't know you needed light. But I will also give you this piece of advice from experience. Illumination does not mean it's all ecstasy. Illumination also means you start to see clearly inside those things that you need to confront, the things that we're attached to, that we think are our identity. And it helps, if we can do it without a kind of attachment, we can sort of turn the mind to look objectively and bring about greater wholeness, or wholesomeness, as Dalai Lama would say. So when you turn up the light, you may see some things, and don't push it away. And I can give you this advice also. You use the energy of whatever arises and you bring it to the path. Without judgment, you use the energy, even if it appears to be anger or grief or whatever comes up, you use that, you look at it as raw energy without judgment and use it to push you further on the path. I had once asked my Tibetan teacher, I think most of you know I spend quite a bit of time in India when I'm not teaching in the summers. And I stay at the monastery with Komtul Rinpoche, and I say his name as an invocation, as well as Pir Vilayat Hazrat Anayat Khan. Japati of Neo, Murshida Virakorda, Murshid Sanya Lewis. His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Achak Rinpoche. Anyway, all the inspired ones. And my door was next to his front door. And a lot of times people would find my door before they'd find his door. And I could see that some of the people that came were quite difficult people. And I said to, and he's in his 70s. And he starts at 7:30 in the morning, and sometimes as late as 11 o'clock at night, people are still coming. Now really imagine what kind of energy that takes to serve in that way. So I said to him, Rinpoche, I really need to ask you, how do you find this energy? You know, how do you not just be completely exhausted? And he's very luminous and very clear. You know, it's this light. And I said, and also I can see some people come and they're quite, in Tibetan they would call it rough, they have a rough manner. And even with Rinpoche sometimes I've seen them act that way, and then he turns them very gently, and then they sort of reemerge in a different atmosphere. And he said to me, and we worked through a translator, but it was like this, Nuria, I view every person that comes to me, and especially the difficult ones, as an aid to my enlightenment. They show me the path to enlightenment. So I offer that to you too. As you find difficulties arise and difficult people in life, that you use the energy of that to train yourself. Does that make sense? It's such a beautiful sort of turning of the mind. So I'm going to review just a little bit for the benefit of those that are joining the class. And we started yesterday, and we're given these instructions now. I'm working from Pure Vilayat's teachings of looking inwardly and developing inwardly this interior landscape. And in the landscape, there are mountains, or it could just be a singular beautiful mountain emerging out of the ground. And we know that it's just sort of prior to sunrise, so you feel that stillness. You know, it's those moments before this cacophony of nature wakes up. And we feel a subtle movement and the stirring within us as the light starts to get brighter. And then if you've seen that image, in reality, you know what a beautiful and magnificent vision it is as those first rays start to peek over the mountain. And it's like that. And that light starts to fill our being. And we allow those lights to penetrate the heart and sort of burst forth and fill the whole body. And really feel your body, because as you do the practice, you may feel kind of a subtle stirring, or you may notice pulsations that you're not always aware of. And sometimes you can experience things at a very subtle level, almost like the cells dancing with light. Time we start to relate to the external light in the environment. And so the light is penetrating us both from the external light and this internal light. If we could look really in a very deep way through a microscope at our beings, the fact is, you know, there's infinite amount of space between each cell. And so in reality, we're kind of these mirages. And we really, the light outside and the light inside are ultimately one light. And they penetrate. We can absorb that light through our skin, and we can also radiate it. Pure Vilayat goes on to say, he worked a lot with us with our auric and etheric fields. And so if you can have this sense of the energy that's radiating from you and also being charged up from the light of the atmosphere, sort of see if you can become aware of that space just outside your skin. And let that become infused with light. Yesterday, Lila was teaching us that dance that is done around the Lady of Guadalupe. And if you know that image of Our Lady of Guadalupe, her radiance, her whole auric field. It's not just a halo, but her whole auric field is radiating. And that was the vision that was given. Again, charge the body. It's like we're charging up the battery with light, feeling the cellular structure, absorbing light and radiating it. And Purvalayat says, to identify yourself with the light counterpart of the fabric of the body. And he also says to be aware of the environmental light. So that's what we're doing here. And he says that being aware of it, just aware of it, will absorb more light. And yesterday I referred to a teaching that Rashida Vera gave to me and perhaps other students, where she said, she gave me the instruction. She was very attuned to the elementals. She was very much a master of the elemental world. And I remember she said, take your hand and lightly brush it over the vegetable kingdom on plants and bushes, flowers and trees, and notice the reflection of the light. And she said, to touch that and sort of bring that into your being. Did she ever tell you that, Nirmal Ma? Yeah. And she also gave the wazifa, Ya Kareem, the generous one, to feel the generosity of the light and the mineral kingdom. Beautiful practice. So you might want to think about doing that today in this beautiful environment. So we'll start just by working with the breath and continuing with this practice. And it's a little bit of a, you know, you really have to focus your mind, because what we're doing is we're inhaling, and as we're inhaling, we're simultaneously sort of absorbing the atmosphere of light from the external world, and at the same time kind of charging up that interior landscape. And as we exhale, we're radiating the light. So you're breathing in and you're like a solar collector. You're absorbing. And as you breathe out, you're radiating. And continue the breath, and I'll read these words of Purvalayat. A good technique in meditation consists in drawing in light as you inhale, concentrating on the way your body cells jiggle when nurtured with the light as you hold your breath. So maybe pause for a moment. Feel the absorption. That's his instruction here. Hold the breath a little bit. Then willfully radiate a lot of light as you exhale. And this is so Purvalayat. Think that that light hurtles into outer space at probably more than 186,000 miles a second. It might even bombard the stars. So you're really sending it out. So I'll speak a little bit while you continue with that breath, because it's arising in this moment. It's not in this instruction. But I want to refer to teachings by Hazrat Inayat Khan, because this practice of projecting in that way is very key to some of the breath practices that were left to us by Paramurshid Hazrat Inayat Khan. And we've been given breath practices to help develop concentration, and also their breath practices for projection. And that aspect, in a sense, of projection is, I think, key to the healing ritual, but also sort of doing benefit. You think about the yogis that are in these caves that have been meditating for years, and you may say, well, what good is that? You know, they're just there working on themselves. But in reality, they're sort of projecting, as Pirvalayat's giving these instructions, they're projecting their minds out into the world, the energy that of the generation of their practice. And, you know, that is essential that we learn how to also do that, that we feel the core. So the instructions is to develop that inner light, but then also be able to, as Pirvalayat, he used the word willfully, project that. Now, I might also say we don't impose that, but we just offer it. And I like to give this analogy, like the sun that just radiates. It just radiates, and it's there for absorption. But the sun doesn't discriminate and doesn't say, I only shine on you, or you, or you, and, well, to heck with you. It shines everywhere. So now Pirvalayat he's turning the instructions, and he's syncing us up with the breath and this sensitivity of absorbing light and also radiating it internally on the inhalation, holding it, sort of feeling amping up, and then willfully radiating it out. And he gets us synced up in that way. Then he gives us two wazifa, or wazaif, mantra, to do in tandem. And on the inhalation, the first wazifa is zahir, which is the manifest one. And it's a very interesting way of using this wazifa, in that what he's saying is you're concentrating inwardly on zahir, and you're feeling that explosion of light internally as the sun is radiating over the mountain. And he calls this an outburst of light, or like an epiphany. He always used that word, epiphany. So it's like this epiphany of light inwardly as you breathe in zahir. And as you breathe out, it changes to manaur, which means the radiant one. So with that manaur, his instructions were to willfully project the light out. He said it could be we're projecting it at the speed of 186,000 miles per second, and we're bombarding the stars. So breathing in zahir and out manaur. Thank you. And he says of the word, or the sacred word, attribute of God, of Zahir, he says, Zahir is the lifting or the removal of the veil, and the absolute equivalent of that word, epiphany. The day when the shepherds met the child Jesus, came to honor him and pay him homage. It was this outburst of light. So it's like that. It's almost, I liken it to the Big Bang. Yeah? That's what Zahir is. And if you think of it in that way, the Big Bang, and there's this projection of this huge explosion of light, this epiphany, as Pir Vilayat says it. And then you relate it to physical science, natural science. What is science telling us now? If the Hubble telescope is pointed into deep space, okay, and what we're really looking at is the past, because the universe is creating itself in an outward motion. And that's what, in a way, Pir Vilayat is connecting us to, is to connect the past, the present, and the future in this one moment. I love this mudra where you put your forefinger and your thumb together, because that's the symbol for that. That closes the circuit. It's like where the past and the future meet in the present moment. And that's what this practice is doing, because we're absorbing the light of the stars and the universes now that we're discovering through looking into deep space. And we're also projecting it out. It's really, if you can grasp this, perhaps my words are inadequate, but you can sense something behind those words and get a feeling for what Pierre was trying to teach and really what is part of our real world. I mean, it's real. It's not, it's tangible. It's not imaginary. So in a sense, look as if you're looking into deep space inwardly and feeling this explosion of light like a Big Bang, and then you're also drawing that in from the universe and then projecting it out again. You're almost your own Big Bang. And further he says, if you meditate at night, you will become aware of your relationship with the stars. You will realize that your aura is the light of the cosmos converged as us. When you sense the light surrounding your body, think that what I call my aura is the same as the light of the stars. Our body does absorb light, whether of the sun, the stars, a candle, or electric light. So continue with the breath. And this practice of putting the concentration of a word on the breath is called in the Sufic tradition, fikr. And in the Gathas, Hazaratanayak Khan talks about the essential aspect of fikr, in that it circulates the vibration of that quality with the breath oxygenates the blood, and the blood then circulates it through the entire system. So we're really kind of restructuring ourselves. If you're familiar with those water studies of Dr. Umoto, they're discovering that that is so true. That playing certain sounds affects the structure, the crystalline structure of water when it's frozen, or even riding on a vial of water changes it. So now we have science that's demonstrating what has been given to us a long time ago. That these words really, if we're made of all this water, how much? Not 80, 90%?
85.
Huh?
85.
Yeah, so think of that we can change sort of the cellular structure by circulating these vibrations. So breathing in, Zahir, collecting light, amping up internally, and radiating with Manawar. Say these words together on a tone, and we use the prefix ya as a kind of term of endearment. It's like, oh dear manifest one, oh beloved manifest one, and Manawar is the radiant one. Ya za. Sense, as Pirbalai has instructed, this jiggling of the cells, the dancing of the cells with light, and then the projection of that light. So breathing in Zahir, being very sensitive and aware of the generation and absorption of light, and then projecting it. We're lifting that bushel and we're letting the light shine. We're not hiding our light under a bushel. We're radiating the light. And it's a really, I have to say, it's a kind of impersonal sense of this radiation, but it's just a constant offering. If you can get into the sense that you're constantly offering this for the betterment of all beings and the planet and really, in ultimately, the universe. Hasrat-Anait Khan says of this process, this particular practice, it is by this process that one becomes like a luminous star. And he uses the word star here because stars absorb light and then radiate them back. Now let's use this Zahir Manaur on the breath. And we can use the inhalation of the breath on Zahir, the absorption, and then the radiation on Manaur. So it goes like this. Zahir, Manaur. Zahir, Manaur. Zahir, Manaur. Zahir, Manaur. Commentary by Pirvalayat as he was giving this practice. If you concentrate intensely on the light in the environment and draw your attention to the light surrounding your body, you will discover yourself as an effigy of light of great beauty. Your physical face will now appear as a mask through which your real being is trying to transpire. It seems like a scintillating kaleidoscope array of pure effulgence or a glow of a flame or the awakening from the perspective of the human dimension of your being. One step will lead to a further one. So sort of sense that there's this sort of the Pure Light used to quote, I can't remember if it was Ibn Arabi, but he would say, try to discover that which is trying to transpire behind that which appears. And so that kind of encapsulates all of these words. What is that that's transpiring behind what appears? It's kind of like dropping the veil. He said Zahir is like ripping away or tearing away that veil and then allowing what is really there to emerge. Rashida Vera worked with this practice in this way, and I'll just share this practice in retreat with her. There were a number of us that met on Palm Sunday in California at a campsite that was similar to this. And she provided us with these white paper plates. And she had us, with color markers and crayons, draw something that we thought was the image of our soul. It didn't have to be a face. It could be a symbol or something like that. But we went into meditation, and she had us get in touch with that. And then she had these sticks that we attached them to. And we walked around the whole retreat. Were you there? Do you know this practice? We walked around with those before us. You know, like, this is the real face, and this is the fake one, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's like the mirror of the soul. It was really a fantastic practice. Can you imagine walking around all weekend like that? And you're looking at each other in that way. So she was really trying to get us in touch with that which is always trying to transpire behind that which appears. And now, listen carefully, because Pierre could get a little, you know, he was always in these celestial realms. If you consider your consciousness as a focal point in space, light seems to radiate from a point located in space. So he was always trying to get our consciousness expanded. So that's what he's saying. If you consider your consciousness as a focal point in space, light seems to radiate from a point located in space. The sun, the stars, a candle, an electric bulb. But when you turn within in your meditation, as your consciousness gets inverted, it is diffused, and consequently, your representation of light is shifted. So can you feel that, sort of that inversion, bringing the light inwardly? He's sort of preparing us for the practice of Nur, because Nur is that aspect of the divine that becomes self-aware, self-illuminating. It's a very subtle form of light. And it is a self-awareness, self-illumination. So it's that kind of inversion of light. And then he quotes Pir Murshid Hazratanai Khan and says that he has assigned the words all-pervading light to that very practice. And then, you know, the prayer goes on to say the all-pervading light in space and life in space. So there you have it. Very deep teaching. We need to clearly distinguish between the all-pervading nature of light as we turn within and the radiant light. They're two different things, but they're connected. And he's quoting Ibn Arabi here, where he says, "Remember that light is of two kinds, a light having no rays," it's kind of this self-generation light, "and the radiant light. As for the light that has no rays, it is the light within which self-disclosure takes place." I'm going to read it again because it's a very subtle teaching, but it's so important. "Remember that light is of two kinds, a light having no rays and a radiant light." So it's kind of this natural arising, as I said, self-awareness light it just radiates within, and it sort of emerges from within naturally. And then this radiant light, okay, so remember there are two kinds of light, a light having no rays, a radiant light, and as for the light that has no rays, it is the light within which self-disclosure takes place. And to quote Shahabuddin Sawardi, "I saw the robe of light altogether in me, and I was altogether in it." Can you imagine? I mean, that's the way it really is, but can we realize it is the question. So I saw the robe of light altogether in me. That's the light that has no rays. And I was altogether in it, that we're commingled with this light.
And are you saying robe?
Robe, yes. Yes, thank you. Please ask if you... Sometimes heart, it's a vacuous space. Now, I have to read you this quote because I love this quote by Einstein, which kind of highlights this. I like looking at science and how it clarifies. Wait, is it in here? Inshallah, it will present itself. I like looking at how science is informing us. Of course, it's number 3, Buddha Dharma Sangha. Or maybe not. Is it again? I have too many papers. I have things to share with you, too, at some point. I hope we get into it. But we have this whole wealth of information on the seven valleys of Farida Dinatar, and maybe I didn't end up putting it in. Let's go one more time. Information on the dark night of the soul, which certainly relates to that discovery of light. St. Teresa of Avila, the interior castle, she chronicles this process for us. It's really extraordinary. These beings have all been on this path, and they have these maps that we can use. And Pirvalayat was giving us it, but we'll also tell you in this paper called A Sufi Message of Spiritual Liberty, London, 1914. It's all here. Even with the charts that Hazrat Anayat Khan has given us of this evolution of consciousness, of what we're on, this path. You know, he was also a bit of a scientist too. Really extraordinary. So wonderful, these teachings. I mean, you know, I say to my students at the college, you know, don't be dull in your learning process. I mean, I always get so excited to learn something new. It's like, I can't believe you people aren't doing, you know, cartwheels and flips in the hallways. It's like, what's up with that? You know? Where's that enthusiasm? You know what? It was right here. Look at that. Okay, so that little story had to come out, I guess. I love this quote. Here he is. A human being is a part of a whole called by us universe, a part limited in time and space. He experiences himself, his thoughts and feelings, as something separate from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of his consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and to affection for a few persons nearest us. Our task is to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty. Isn't that beautiful? He was totally... You know, I mean, he was discovering the universe in a certain way, but how spiritual is that quote?
Yeah. I'm sorry, those of us who are still waking up, could you read one more?
Oh, time? Of course. And I'll be glad to share it again and again. Huh? Second that. Okay, did I read it too fast, or you just want to absorb it? A human being is a part of a whole called by us universe. A part limited in time and space. So that's kind of relating, you know, this practice of pure reliance of trying to get us in touch with the celestial and to bringing it into this, to not have that limitation. There is no limitation. Consciousness goes on and on, you know. Einstein said an energy created once is never destroyed, right? I think it was Einstein. God, I hope it was. Anyway, whoever it was, and if someone knows, you can say it, but I think it was him. And if that's true, then we know we're made up of electrical impulses. That's energy. So when the shroud leaves, what happens to that? It becomes part of the fabric of the universe. Or if you're Buddhist in persuasion, that transmigrates and takes a rebirth. So, a human being is a part of a whole called by us universe, a part limited in time and space. He experiences himself, his thoughts and feelings, as something separate from the rest. So So we sort of think, I'm not connected. You know, Buddhists call that interdependence, that we're all connected in some way. And we see that symbol, the yin-yang, kind of represents that, the Irish knot, I think they call it, and there's also the Tibetan knot. Like, everything is interconnected, and that's what he's saying here. He experiences himself as thoughts and feelings as something separate from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of his consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and to affection for a few persons nearest us. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty. All living creatures. And Dalai Lama says it this way: think of those that hurt you and harm you. If you have trouble like expanding that to people you don't feel so great about, or maybe people that don't feel great about you. Like, you know, you maybe have a great affection for someone and they just as the students say, diss you all the time, disrespect you, or, you know, whatever. And you still love them. You widen the circle of compassion. And Dalai Lama says, think of those that hurt you and harm you as the great guru who comes to teach you strength and courage. Think of those that hurt you and harm you as the great guru who comes to teach you strength and courage. And my Tibetan teacher, but I have to say these things because Hazrananayak Khan spoke of many different religions. He spoke of Buddhism. You know, if you've read The Unity of Religious Ideals, he was always trying to present or highlight his message with other familiar paths. And some of you I know are involved in Buddhism. So in the Nundro practices, which are the preliminary practices where you do just, you know, 100,000 prostrations, you do a concentration. And Comtul Rinpoche transmitted it. You know, I was to have this elaborate visualization, but who was before me were my enemies. And I was prostrating to them. I was leading all the others, but we were prostrating to the enemies. You think about that. Really sort of think about the profoundness of that. What does that teach one? It maybe doesn't feel quite right to you, but I'm going to leave you with that little contemplation for the day.
Chew
and we can
that.
Talk about it. You just gnaw on it a little bit. Yeah. I offer this as our aspirational bodhicitta arising of the compassionate mind, and also as our closing here and dedication of merit. Whatever joy there is in this world all comes from desiring others to be happy, and whatever suffering there is in this world all comes from desiring myself to be happy. But what need is there to say much more? The childish work for their own benefit. The Buddhas work for the benefit of others. Just look at the difference between them.
Soha.
Thank you. Blessings. Have a blessed day. And inshallah, we'll see each other again and again. This is a sequence of teaching, so if you want to continue, you know, join us through the rest of the camp. I thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Contributing your concentration to the practice. Thank you so much.